Much of the attention of the country focuses on the dire water situation in California, but it's dry all over our region, and more than half of Oregon's counties declared drought this year, too. So it was likely that at some point water users would begin to notice issues and water providers would have to address those issues. Both Junction City and the Eugene Water and Electric Board, EWEB, have had to change some practices this year. Ashland has a bit more experience with dry conditions and is taking its usual steps. Let's get a picture of the water situation this year. From the city of Ashland, we have Mike Fought, the Public Works Director. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you. Good morning.
Julie Smitherman is back as well, the Ashland Water Conservation Specialist. Julie, welcome to you.
Good morning.
They're both in the studio, as you can tell. And we have with us from EWEB, the External Communications Coordinator, Joe Harwood. Welcome, Joe.
Good morning.
So if each of you can give us a bit of an overview of what's going on in your area. Let's start with you, Joe.
Well, here in Eugene, we're primarily supplied by the McKinsey River, which is supplied by mostly snowpack. And we're seeing right now we're about 63% of normal. We're seeing flow. We saw flows in late June that were more typical of late August. And so what we asked our customers to do was to voluntarily curtail water use. And obviously we wanted to stay away from talking about any type of mandatory restriction. And instead, just ask folks to be mindful of their water use. And there's a lot of water use, obviously, in the summertime with gardens and lawns and that sort of thing. And so we've asked people not to overwater and avoid things like pressure washing your driveway and sidewalk every day, those sorts of things. So we're taking a mostly a voluntary report approach.
Does it even get into areas like pick a day of the week to water your lawn, anything like that? I mean,
no, we haven't gone there yet, and we don't anticipate that we'll have to. But like we've told our customers, just because we have the water, we can draw the water from the river, doesn't mean we necessarily should. Our message has been more or less that if the more water we leave in the McKinsey, which ultimately goes into the Willamette River, it's better for fish and better for all the other downstream users that depend on the Willamette River.
Joe, you also had an issue, I understand, with Trail Bridge Dam and the electric turbine having to come offline a bit sooner than usual.
Yeah, we had to take our Trail Bridge generation turbine offline earlier this month. And we've had to do that in the past before, but never this early. And Trail Bridge maximum capacity is about 5 megawatts. And so that's 2-3% of our daily demand for electricity. So it doesn't hurt us. There's plenty of power out there, but we did have to take it down early this year, and we anticipate we'll probably have to take down an additional turbine on our Walterville project.
And when that happens, do you have to buy power from elsewhere?
Not necessarily. We, like most utilities in the Northwest, get the bulk of our power from the Bonneville Power Administration. And right now, our utility, we still haven't recovered from the demand peaks that we saw in 2007 and 2008. So right now, EWEB is actually long on power. So we have more power than we need. And the market, the wholesale market, is soft. And so selling that surplus power isn't nearly as lucrative as it used to be.
So in a sense, you're getting down to about the level you really need to have for generation, it sounds like.
Yeah, we're actually, yeah, we have plenty of power, and we're not in any danger of having to go out and spend big bucks to buy power on the wholesale market.
Okay, now turning to the city of Ashland then, which obviously is in a slightly drier place. The average precipitation in Ashland probably half annually of what Eugene gets in a given year. And Mike Fought, so you're used to dealing with dry summers for sure. How are things comparing with previous summers so far?
Well, it's interesting. Joe and his community have taken a similar approach that we have in terms of asking for people to voluntarily reduce use. But the overview of our watershed is for the last 2 years, we've seen zero snowpack on May 1st. Generally, when we see drought conditions, we'd have up to 40 inches of snow and still have to cut back. So going to zero last year was a real eye-opener for us. And our community last year responded very well and voluntarily cut back from a general demand of 7.5 million gallons a day down to 4.5 to 5. Well, we find ourselves actually worse this year. The snowpack was gone earlier this year than last year. Excuse me. And so we've once again asked our community to cut back, and once again they're doing that. We're even at those multiple 100-degree days that we had early June, the demand stayed right at that 5 million gallons a day. So we're very fortunate our community is paying attention to our water needs. On top of that, I think our conservation water conservation program really lends a very powerful message as well. We go out, and I'll let Julie talk a little bit about her programs, but we actually offer programs to help people change the way that they irrigate. And it's really important that the difference in our supply, wintertime supply is 2 million gallons a day, less than 2 million gallons a day. Summertime peaks to 7.5. So that's certainly during the summertime when we have drought conditions, when we need to focus on helping our community change the way that they do business. So.
Yeah, I never asked this before, Julia Smitherman, but is there a way, I mean, we have some idea, obviously, knowing what the population is and what the water usage is, what the per capita use would be. Are there any city-by-city, side-by-side comparisons you've ever done to get a look at how Ashland's water use compares to others?
We're actually lower than some and obviously higher than others. I think that per capita, it's about 100 gallons per day per person, roughly. And I think that a lot of our community actually in the summertime will reduce to even 50 gallons per day. And so just because we have such a responsive community, and it is doable, you can reduce that much and still keep your quality of life.
What are some of the bits of low-hanging fruit? What are the first places that you usually let people know are the places they can have the greatest impact for the least effort?
That's a very good question. And I would probably say leaks. Fix those leaks as soon as possible, because they're not going to fix themselves, and they usually get worse rather than better. Another thing is to just change out some of your hardware. Very easy fix, such as changing out an aerator on a faucet in the bathroom. You can change it from the standard 2.2 gallons per minute to 1 gallon per minute, and you can save quite a bit of water. Doing that, as well as changing out a shower head and your toilets, could save upwards of 45,000 gallons in a year for a family of four.
So just a couple of changes here and there can
minor
make
changes,
a big difference.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Although, and we do have rebates for toilets if people would like to replace their toilets with more high-efficiency water-sense toilets, then we do have rebates available. And we're also giving away shower heads and aerators at our Public Works building at 51 Winburn Way.
You just give them away to Ashland residents?
We're just giving them away to anyone who lives in the city of Ashland that uses water.
Since you mentioned the toilets and the low-flow toilets,
I've
often wondered about the old trick that I think came out of, I don't know when this was, earlier in my life, let's just put it that way, but the idea of putting a brick in your toilet tank to take up some of the capacity.
Well, and the concept seems correct, just displacing some of that water. The problem with the brick is that it actually breaks down and it will deteriorate the flapper, and that causes leaks to happen more quickly. And so you end up having a leak, or you end up having to flush a couple more times, because the toilet isn't designed to flush with less water. And so the newer toilets, the WaterSense labeled toilets, have gone through third-party testing to make sure that they perform well and reduce the amount of water being used.
Water and water conservation, the issue here on the Jefferson Exchange. You're more than welcome to join us. Mike Fott is the Ashland Public Works Director. Julie Smitherman, you just heard, is the Ashland Water Conservation Specialist. Joe Harwood from EWEB, the Eugene Water and Electric Board, is on the phone with us. You can join us as well at 800-838-3760 around the region. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Joe Harwood, is the McKenzie the primary or only source of water for the city of Eugene?
The McKenzie is the sole source of water for the city of Eugene. We're one of the few utilities of our size that relies on a single source of water, and so we take great pains to protect that source.
Are there any backup supplies or rights or emergency things you can tap into?
Yeah, actually, we have partnerships with neighboring utilities, Rainbow Water District, Springfield Utility Board, that can give us a little bit of water through interties. We've also developed a water right on the Willamette River, and we're actually in the process right now of starting the process of exploiting that water right. The long-term plan, probably the next 5 to 6 years, would be to build a small, about a 10 million gallon a day treatment plant that would draw water from the Willamette River, and that would be a good backup source.
But at this point, there is no intake, there's no setup, there's no machinery in place to take that water from the Willamette?
That's correct.
All right. So for Mike and Julie, the situation has changed a bit for the city of Ashland in recent years in that you have tied into the Medford water system, which brings stuff all the way from the slopes of Mount McLaughlin from Big Butte Springs. Has that eased the crunch? Is it is this the second or the third summer with that?
Well, we actually built that during construction emergency project last summer. Mm-hmm. And the answer to that is no. That was added to our system as an emergency supply only, so it's not meant to just add in whenever we need it. The way our structure is set is that we use Ashland Creek water until that's not sufficient to keep a reservoir full, and then we add Talent Irrigation District water, which has been a supplemental water supply for years. And then if the two of those don't meet our demand, then we would add the tap water. But it's certainly there and ready to go. We've had to use it for a couple of days this year. So.
Tap meaning Talent Ashland Phoenix. It's not just water out of the tap.
I do want to make sure it's clear because our community still needs, and we're just now in the beginning of the drought season here. We're late July, but we're moving into August, September, and it's really important our community continues to keep that demand. That's really where we're going to be able to make it through the summer, is if our community keeps that demand to 4.5 to 5 million gallons a day and continues to conserve that water.
I think what I hear you saying very, very carefully is don't think just because the connection exists to Medford, hey, okay, we're in Fat City here. Yes. We can just let the water flow.
Yeah, that's correct. Because it could be, as we get later in the summer, we'll need all of those sources to get through. So,
for any of you guys who are water managers, and I want to bring this to you first, Joe, I noticed in a previous discussion, we had a little chat about drought shaming last week on our Vents Day segment, and it was pointed out by somebody who lives in Eugene that people who don't get to see the rivers, don't get to see the lakes, may not really be aware of just how dry it is out there. Is that a message that you have attempted to communicate or you're anticipating communicating to the public?
Yeah, we've actually ramped up our communication initiatives to get the word out to people. And we've actually, it's kind of funny, we actually had a call last week from a concerned customer that wanted to report a local nonprofit was watering its roof with a sprinkler. And this particular nonprofit actually has one of those roof gardens. And we had to talk the customer down, but it was interesting because obviously the message got through that, this is a really dry year and we need to conserve all the water that we can. And folks haven't hesitated to pick up the phone and either ask questions or, report someone. And again, I want to make it clear that we're not under any type of mandatory restriction. It's all voluntary water conservation at this point.
You know, I did ask Julie about the per capita numbers for Ashland. Do you have an idea what the general per person per day use of water is in your district?
Yeah, we're right around 110 gallons per person per day. Our average water demand is about 42 million gallons throughout the summer.
Okay, and do you have a conservation specialist like Julie on your staff there at EWIB?
Yeah, we have a couple of them, and what they concentrate on are much of the same things that Julie has already discussed, i.e. the WaterSense toilet, the low-flow shower heads, WaterSense labeled faucets. We really preach, as far as inside the home goes, finding and fixing leaks. Outdoors, we have this handy little device called the green grass gauge, and it's essentially a cup that you put in your lawn or your landscape. And every Friday, the three TV stations we have here in town will broadcast the next week's watering recommendations. So, for instance, I think last week it was 1.4 inches, and what we've been able to do with that green grass gauge, we have over 100,000 of those that have been given away free by EWEB and our neighboring utilities. It really has cut back on water over the last several years, overwatering, I should say. So, in terms of conserving water in the summer, we've been pretty we've had pretty good results with that green grass gauge, so people aren't overwatering their lawn or their landscape.
And I'll take a wild guess that through the use of that gauge, people are probably measuring what they're watering for the first time.
Yeah, actually, and it's a handy little gauge. It'll hold about an inch and a half of water. And in fact, I was talking to a gentleman about a week ago today, yeah. And he said, I was probably putting three times as much water on my lawn as I had to. And just following that simple green grass gauge. And folks can also sign up for email alerts. We'll just email it out to them every week. We found some pretty good success there.
All right, we're talking about water on the Jefferson Exchange. You're welcome to join us. Joe Harwood from eWeb is the External Communications Coordinator. Julie Smithermans, Ashland's Water Conservation Specialist. Mike Fought, the Public Works Director. You can join us at 800-838-3760 with water thoughts and stories and questions from your community. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. I see you're writing down green water gauge there, Julie. Is this something you've tried in Ashland before?
Well, we haven't tried the green water gauge specifically, but we do have other means. We've been giving away the moisture meters, soil moisture meters, for our customers to use. We also give those away at the Public Works Building, 51 Winburn Way. But what that does is just help customers become more more focused and look at their plants. And they put the gauge into the ground, and it will tell them whether or not the soil is still moist from a previous watering. And it's really helpful with gardens. It can be used with the lawn. Because oftentimes on a really hot day, you might think, oh, I should water, it's really hot. You go out, you test the soil, more than likely it still has a little bit moisture left. And so then you can forego watering that day and then skip it a couple days.
How much do your discussions with water consumers in the city of Ashland get into the issues of automatic systems? I've noticed a lot of places where people will be watering away even when the rain is falling, or in times of day when the evaporation rate is likely to be high.
Yeah.
I just wonder how much education you're able to provide in terms of things like how to set your system, because I know I've met at least one person in my life who I said, your sprinkler is sprinkling in my car. She said, I don't know how to turn it off.
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked that question. We have a really big program. We do have our sprinkler irrigation evaluations, and they're free. And what we do, we have a trained team that will come out and evaluate your irrigation system zone by zone to make sure it's running as efficiently as possible, point out design issues or small minor changes that can be made easily. And one of the biggest things that we look at is their sprinkler controller and how long it's set for. Because more often than not, and like Joe was saying, is that people tend to overwater, especially with lawns. And what we show them is that the water needs of plants change throughout the summer months. From June to July to August, the needs are very different. And so if you just get out there and actually change your controller, change the times on your controller regularly, you can reduce your consumption by up to 60%.
Do the water needs increase or decrease, or is that just a plant-by-plant thing?
Well, it starts out lower in May, goes up a little bit, and reaches a peak in July. And so it's like a bell curve, and then it starts to come down as you go into August. So even though we still have hot temperatures in August, the days start to get shorter, and so the evaporation rates are less. And so the plant needs less water than it actually does during the middle of the summer.
While we're speaking about grass and plants, there's also been an installation, I understand, in one of the key medians in town of artificial turf.
Yes, that's part of one of our pilot projects. We are doing three different pilots right now, and that is just one of them. We are also looking at a drought-tolerant lawn, and it's basically supposed to reduce water need on lawn by 30%. It's a variety that's been developed out of NextGen in Albany. It's a research facility on turf grass. And so we are looking at some data. We have a plot here locally in town that we are collecting watering information from, and we would like to be able to use that as well for one of our pilots. And then we're also just, again, looking at drought-tolerant plants for the medians throughout Siskiyou Boulevard.
So how I know we talked to the some of the folks earlier this year about the different kinds of grasses. I mean, it's a fairly significant difference in the amount of water that that some of the more drought tolerant varieties require.
That's right. That's right. And 30% less is what some of these what it's called is the Turf Grass Water Conservation Alliance has partnered. It's sort of like WaterSense in the fact that they're a third-party testing facility. And so if they determine that a grass seed actually meets the requirements to be drought tolerant, then they will get that TWCA logo on their grass seed.
And Joe Harwood, since you're pretty much just a few miles south of the world capital of grass seed growing, do you have much to do with TWCA and similar entities?
No, this is actually the first I've heard of it, and I'm intrigued.
Well, Joe, I think you and I need to talk.
Very good.
Yeah.
So I mean, do you give recommendations with your water conservation people at eWeb about types of landscaping? Does it get into that depth of discussion?
Oh yeah, absolutely. One of the things we've been asking customers to do for decades is, first of all, plant native plants, and second of all, aim at the water efficient species of plants. And we have an online guide on our website that points people toward water efficient landscaping. I think there's 7 steps, and we've made some partnerships with the Lane County Master Gardener Association, and have done pretty well as far as convincing folks to use native or water efficient shrubs and plants and that sort of thing.
It sounds like, from what you were saying about the person calling in the report about somebody watering their roof, is that the drought shaming muscle may be developing even in Eugene, which is doing pretty well generally in the water department.
True. Yeah, we had a postal carrier came into our headquarters building downtown here and said, "Hey, I heard about your request to cut back on water use, and I want to know why your maintenance guy is power washing the side of your building right now." And so we got drought shamed ourselves.
Okay, well, we'll come back and talk more. We're going to push Garrison Keillor back by a few minutes, and we'll come back and talk about water with Joe Harwood, Julie Smitherman, and Mike Fought. Stay tuned. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 5. On the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. We're continuing a discussion about water and how communities that are dealing with the drought this year. It is an issue on both sides of the state line, something the folks in Ashland are fairly used to. Mike Fought, the Public Works Director, and Julie Smitherman, the Water Conservation Specialist, are in the room with me. We have on the line from eWeb, the Eugene Water and Electric Board, Joe Harwood, the External Communications Coordinator. And you can join us with thoughts, comments, questions about water conservation in this dry year, 800-838-3760, or by email jx@jeffnet.org. We had just talked about drought shaming just a little bit, and Joe was telling us a story about somebody pressure washing the eWeb building. What was the response to the person who was complaining about one of your people pressure washing the building?
It was, first we had to explain to this person that the restrictions are there's no mandatory restrictions in place, and all we were asking our customers to do is to be mindful of their water use, and this particular person wasn't satisfied, so we went ahead and let our maintenance folks know that use a broom instead of a pressure washer.
All kinds of good moves to reduce the use of water here.
Sure.
Reading, for example, we were talking about having them on maybe in a future show now, but have hired a private security force to see if people are minding the water restrictions in town, which is not quite the same thing as drought shaming, but it's to make sure that people are complying. Has Ashland ever gotten to the point in your tenure, Mike, of having a chance to look around and give people warnings? You have educational chats with people, I think, is what goes on now.
Well, in 2009, we did implement our curtailment ordinance, the first level. And again, our community reacts so quickly. While there was a few, again, customers do call in, I think, as Joe pointed out, but we had a few complaints. We had a few conversations with some folks. But overall, the response was great, even moving into curtailment.
And so is there any chance of moving into the curtailment ordinance this year?
Well, I'd like to think not. Last year, again, was a good test of the system of asking our community to voluntarily cut back. And while it's a bit worse this year, we're seeing that same trend. That's an option that we have to keep available to us if we see demand starting to go up or our supply starts to drop. below our ability to supply the community. But I would think if we continue the way we are now, it's similar to last year, we'll be able to get through the summer.
And so, Julie, you were telling us during the break about Waterwise Landscaping, reminding us that there are other places where people can go to find information about things they could be growing in Ashland that would help their water conservation.
Yeah, so here in Ashland, we have a website. It's ashlandsaveswater.org, and it's all about Waterwise Landscaping. It's basically a digital or virtual garden tour. You're able to go on there under the guided search and plants. This is my favorite part. And you can choose if you want perennials, how high you want them to grow, what soil you have them growing in, if they're in full sun, what flowers you want them to bloom and when. And then you press enter, and it populates all of those plants for you. So you can choose based on that criteria. So it's a pretty cool website.
It really is. And so they just go to ashlandsaveswater.org and find all the tools there?
We are using that website in conjunction with our lawn replacement program, where we're actually incentivizing customers who want to remove lawn areas that they're not using anymore. And we give 75 cents per square foot. And so that Waterwise Landscaping website is very helpful to those customers when choosing the plants to replace their lawn with.
So for every square foot of lawn that they take out of lawnness and turn into something else. But does it have to be a certain list of things that it converts to?
And there can be drought-tolerant plants. We don't have a narrowed-down list, but we do review the plans when they come into the office and give suggestions. Then we it's a tiered rate. So the most a customer could get would be $1,500. Mm-hmm. So 75 cents for the first 1,000 square feet, 50 cents for the second 1,000, and 25 cents for the third 1,000. So up to 3,000 square feet, essentially.
The mark of success would be dollars paid out of the program. How is it doing so far?
Oh, it's doing incredibly well. We have over 130 applicants so far, looking to save upwards of 2 million gallons for each summer. So during the watering season, we're going to be reducing water use by about 2 million gallons just with this program. You can put in drought-tolerant plants. You can also put in permeable pavers. As long as it's permeable, you're allowed to use it. And then also we are allowing folks to put in the artificial turf in their homes.
Okay. And I'd like to add to that. I think the difference between how we're responding to drought is that we're asking for people to voluntarily curtail. And I think the programs that Julie's implemented here in Ashland are the long-term, a supply option, if you will, so it reduces the overall demand of our system. Well worth our investment to do those programs.
Which does address future years. And Joe Harwood, the question for you at eWeb would be then, if you have another year like this one, might you be looking at some higher levels of activity to convince people to use less water?
Yeah, we would definitely be looking at ramping up our conservation short and long-term programs. Our biggest problem this year is the Cascades supply our water, and there's, I think, the total precip was about 80 to 85% of average, and the problem was most of that fell in the form of rain. Mm-hmm. And snowpack in the Orkin Cascades here was 20% or less of average. And so we're hoping that we'll see a snowpack improve, and we won't have to ramp up our conservation efforts to the point where we're asking people to take their lawns out and that sort of thing. But it's better to be prepared for that, and we have some experts here on staff that are looking at some different strategies. And after listening to Julie today, I think I'll be passing her name along to our folks.
She's got quite a bit of experience and has obviously been putting it to good use. So I want to thank you all for joining us today to talk about water, and let's keep our fingers crossed for snowpack much later this year. Joe Harwood is the External Communications Director, Communications Coordinator, rather, at eWeb, the Eugene Water and Electric Board, Julie Smitherman, the Ashland Water Conservation Specialist, Mike Fought, the Ashland Public Works Director. Thank you all for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.